Welcome to the IDP Show. I'm your host, Josh Schramer, joined in the Soul Shack this afternoon. On my right, Adam Markham. Addy, how are you, hon?
Doing well, Josh. Always weird to do these lunchtime episodes.
I know.
But we're going to be okay, you know? Water's good.
Water is good.
Water's good to have with the soda every once in a while.
That's right. Professional attire coming over from the office. Right. There's like daylight outside.
Yeah, feeling good. Really good.
The energy is still, it's still high. It's still highly sexual. And it's we're ready to rock and roll.
Very aroused.
And speaking of aroused, we are incredibly excited to have joining us, you know him from IDP Guys and DLF. It is Jace Abbey. Jace, how are you, my friend?
I am great. Thanks, Josh. It's really cool to be on. Sorry to force you guys into a midday pod session, but I'm selfish enough to be 6 hours ahead of you guys. It actually makes a nice change not to have to set the alarm for sort of 1-2 in the morning to record this. So I appreciate it. But yeah, really cool to be here with you guys. Big fan of your show for some time now. You guys do great work, and I'm just really excited to talk about defense.
Well, we're excited to have you on. Of course, if folks haven't checked it out, you were on with John Macri earlier this season on the Big Nickel IDP podcast, and we're excited to have you on today. The season is ramping up. You can feel the energy. We're coming to the start of the third week of the NFL preseason, and then the regular season is right around the corner. We're starting to get some news trickling out. Teams are making roster decisions. Guys are being moved to the PUP list. Guys are being cut. There's trades happening. A lot of stuff is going down. Football is in the air, Addy, and we're excited. We're ramping up on the back end, getting ready for a really cool 2022 season.
Oh, yeah, baby. It's finally here.
We can stop talking about what we think is going to happen or what has happened and just react to some football here.
Yeah, maybe
soon.
We won't get as many threads about who we need to draft our leagues.
Maybe thread season will finally come to an end.
I hope so. Good God. Twitter's a cesspool right now. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so it'll be nice to have some football to react to and some actual games to watch. That's what's fun about getting to talk IDP. But as we conclude the offseason here, Jace, we are having you on to wrap up our divisional preview series. And today we are talking with you about the NFC West and the NFC East. And then in the second half of the episode, Bobo will be joining us to talk with Tripp about the AFC West and the AFC East. So similar to our previous preview episode that featured Bobby and Evan and Alex Caruso and Drew Dodson, we are looking at two players from each team. We're going to be touching on either a sleeper, a breakout, a bust, or a stud. And we're going to give you guys, 16 players per segment? So 32 players. Jace, if nothing else, the listeners are going to come away hearing a lot of names on this episode.
Yeah, I mean, the NFC East and West, they're two pretty cool divisions. There's a lot of big names and a lot of emerging players as well. So, we'll get into all of that. But, I feel pretty lucky to have got the NFC East and West. I mean, it's all good. Every division's got those players. But, yeah, especially these two. Some pretty cool stuff going on.
Absolutely. I look through the list of names here. We've got these guys numbered out and sometimes we have to squint a little bit with some of these teams to find guys that are really getting our juices going. But yeah, NFC West, NFC East, lot of IDP relevant pieces to talk about. So let's jump into it. Let's not delay any further here, Jace. And we're going to kick things off with the Dallas Cowboys. And the first player that we are talking about is the one and only DeMarcus Lawrence. Now, if you were to look at his total points scored, if you sort by that, any kind of stats when you're drafting on like sleeper, for example, Lawrence probably is not going to show up very high. He only played 7 games last season. But when he played, the man was absolutely dynamite, averaging 16.3 points per game by Big Three scoring. Graded beautifully across the board for PFF, 91 overall defensive grade. And in the playoffs, except for the championship game, he was on an absolute tear. Addy, I know you are a huge DeMarcus Lawrence fan, and this guy, I think even in redraft, is still a nice discount for how prolific he can be.
It's a dumb discount, dude. I love DeMarcus Lawrence. He's still elite. I mean, yeah, but this guy, I'm looking at the best balls we've done. He's gone DL23, DL25, DL27, DL22, DL28. So, bro, I mean, that's insane.
That's a top 12 guy that you're getting sometimes in DL3 territory.
And it's the vet thing again, right? He's almost, 30 years old. So he falls in that same camp as, like, Chandler Jones, Khalil Mack. I don't know. People are just maybe bored with these guys, but still elite, still can bring it. I mean, again, we've talked about grown-ass, you know, being a grown-ass man in that age range that these guys are all kind of at that I just mentioned. I mean, you're still going to be elite fantasy-wise. It doesn't, you know, he's not going to fall off until he's probably 33, 34. So I feel good about DeMarcus Lawrence.
Absolutely. DeMarcus Lawrence, Jace, I know you've been doing some mock drafts as well. Have you been seeing a discount on DeMarcus Lawrence for IDP?
Yeah, it's exactly like you say. He's that forgotten man because he's approaching that age 30 season. And, you know, he's still very good. I think it's a great call. He's always been productive whenever he's been healthy. And as you say, he kind of contributes in multiple ways, right? He's not just a pass rusher. And that helps him stay on the field and leads to, you know, increased opportunities for him to earn more points for as fantasy managers. His pressure rate always compares favorably with others. And I think one of the things I picked out, he sounds really motivated. This will be a bit cliche overload, but he's talking recently about how Parsons showed him up last year and how he wants to reclaim the crown as the sack leader for the Cowboys in 2022. But Pat's wasn't sort of cliche. He was talking about how he's in the best shape. It is cliche, isn't it? He's talking about how he's in the best shape of his career, how he's really focused this year on getting himself into shape and looking after his body. It's better than hearing about injuries, right? Lingering injuries, nagging injuries that are carrying over from the season before. So, yeah, still elite, healthy, motivated. Could be a big year.
Addy, just once, I want someone to say I'm in the worst shape of my life. Like, I'm really fat. I ate way too much.
I got paid. I'm in cruise control now.
Absolutely not taking care of my body. Told my trainer to take a vacation.
Yeah. But, I mean, DeMarcus Lawrence, I think at this point, he's someone that we can trust. You know, when he says something like that, I believe him.
That's right.
You know, he's produced. He's done it. I mean, that's a good team. I mean, I would think he's motivated, you know? I love DeMarcus Lawrence, man. What a value. And also, I mean, he's the reason why you don't have to load up on edge early. I mean, that's a popular narrative. But, I mean, again, there are just tremendous values late in your drafts.
Absolutely. Now, the flip side of this coin, obviously, with this Dallas Cowboys edge rushing group is if DeMarcus Lawrence is a value, we have to ask the question, do we think the quasi edge rusher linebacker Micah Parsons is, where does he fall in these four categories? And it may be a bit of a hot take, maybe not if you've been listening to folks like John Macri, but we are labeling Micah Parsons as a bust. And the important note here, gentlemen, is that he is a bust at cost. Now, if you listen to the last episode of the Big Nickel, or actually, it was PFF. Our boy John Macri got called up to the big leagues for the PFF Fantasy Forecast with Ian Harditz and Dwayne McFarland. Check that out. If you have not yet, very excited for John to be featured over there on one of PFF's main flagship podcasts. But he laid out the case beautifully for why Micah Parsons is bound to regress, especially in the sack department. He was a huge overachiever for being a part-time edge rusher, and the tackle efficiency down around 8%. the average for linebackers, off-ball linebackers, is about 12.5. So not only is he down there in terms of tackle efficiency, his sacks are bound to regress for how few edge rush snaps he played. Jace, where are you on Micah Parsons right now? Are you fading him a little bit, or are you not taking him for where he is going in your startup drafts?
Well, first things first, your popularity level amongst Cowboys fans and any fantasy managers who roster Parsons just plummeted, didn't it? They're literally turning off right now. No, this isn't a bad call, right? And it feels a little weird to name one of the most talented players at his position as a bust. But yeah, looking at his ADP, it's gone through the roof. He was the LB1 in most of the mocks I was doing around July time. Sort of three or four rounds actually ahead of some of the other elite options at a position. So, yeah, I mean, best ball, big play formats, I'm still all over Parsons. I do like how the personnel changes have kind of played into potentially keeping him in a similar role to the one he had last year. The arrival of Anthony Barr and the departure of Gregory, I guess, are the two biggest sort of personnel changes that could affect what Parsons does and how he's used going forward. So I think that plays well. If Parsons did well in your league last year, I think he might. Well, he's obviously going to do well again this year. But yeah, like you say, there's a lot there for him to, it's quite big for him to try and live up to what he achieved last year. He set the bar really high. And the likelihood is that he probably won't do quite as well this year. But I'm still excited about him. As I say, best ball, big play formats. He's my LB1.
Yeah, don't think, Addy, this is any slander toward Micah Parsons. He's one of the most exciting, dynamic, young players in the entire league, not just on the defensive side of the ball. Best ball formats, Jay said it well. We're doing an LB-only best ball draft right now. Micah Parsons went as the 101.
Yeah.
So in that format, it makes sense, especially when you can just cash in on his weeks where he does get two or three sacks.
Yeah.
But in terms of that week-to-week consistency, like Jay said, he just set such a high bar that if you're banking on taking him that high in a startup, you're banking on him being the outlier in terms of regression.
Yeah, right. The problem with Micah Parsons is like when you have your offense plus IDP league, you know, IDP, you're playing with offense and IDPs. In IDP only, with those best balls we've been doing, I love Micah Parsons, you know, just because, I mean, the problem with Micah Parsons is how early he's going, compared to offensive players and stuff, yep. Right? Like that's what makes him, you know, that's what makes him a void for me. But I mean, as far as like, God, if there's somebody I want on my team, like I want Micah Parsons. Like Micah Parsons is a cheat code. Micah Parsons has, I think, just really scratching the surface of what he can do. I mean, is he gonna convert on all those sacks like he did last year? Probably not. But I mean, with him having a low tackle efficiency, I feel like those tackle numbers should go up. I don't know, man. I'm fine with Micah Parsons. I don't like having him as, you know, the first IDP off the board, but I mean, I don't have a problem with him as like one or two.
I think that, yeah, the problem here, and we're trying to speak in that sort of broader context of like startup drafts that are offense and IDP.
That's where he's a problem.
It's not necessarily the order, because he very much deserves to be first or second off the board along with TJ Watt.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of the tier at which he's going in terms of the offensive players that are around him.
He's like you got to take him like, you know, a fourth or fifth round pick to
take
him.
And that's just too high.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to build my team a different. I want to get the offense figured out first. We preach this all the time. I just don't want to have to, I don't want to hit defense that early. You know, that's why we do the show. So you can find those late round values and stuff. That's just not the way we build our teams.
Yeah.
But I mean, IDP only, Micah Parsons, give me all of it. I love it.
Yeah, Jace, it seems like IDP only, especially best ball, Micah Parsons has a case to be the 101 off the board.
Yeah, absolutely. You nailed it, Addy. I mean, he's in combined offense and defensive drafts. Again, looking back to the mocks I was doing, was taking part in July, he's being taken around the same point as Rashod Bateman. Not that far behind Chris Godwin. I unless I'm in leagues that are really sort of favor linebackers in terms of scoring, I'd take those receivers over Parsons all day long. But yeah, it's tough, isn't it? It's because he's so good. But as I say, that bar's been set so high, I'm expecting some sort of drop off.
He's a unicorn. I mean, he's kind of like a supercharged Khalil Mack. Yep. You know, I mean, because he has a chance to get 100 tackles and 10 sacks. Like he is like one of one. You know, so I'm gonna try and roster guys like that. But yeah, I mean, when you bring in offense into the equation, no, we're gonna be patient. We're gonna get the value where we can. And Micah Parsons, unfortunately, is no longer a value.
Yeah, don't hear what we're not saying.
We love Micah Parsons.
Yeah,
dude.
Dallas Cowboys fans, Micah Parsons is amazing. He is a guy you want to have on your team, but at cost, there probably is going to be a little bit of buyer's remorse. Let's move on to one of the NFC West teams, and we are starting in the Bay Area, Jace. Who is your first player that we want to talk about?
So my first guy is Dre Greenlaw. And it feels a little wrong to talk about him as a as a sleeper. He's been around for some time now. He's heading into his fourth year. And when he's healthy, he's had a sizable role. The reason I have him as a sleeper is really that he's just been sort of criminally undervalued right now. I think in those mocks that I keep referring to, he was going as the LB41. So that's after the likes of Camus Grugier-Hill, Kenneth Murray, Zach Cunningham. I mean, I'm all over Greenlaw at that value, and I'd actually feel a bit smug about taking him there too. So, you know, obviously he missed a massive chunk of last year with the groin injury, and the absence is probably the only possible or justifiable reason as to why he seems to have been forgotten. The 49ers, they led their two linebacker sets higher than most teams in the NFL, and I expect that to continue under D'Amico Ryans as he moves into year two as the defensive coordinator over there. So, yeah, the big question, I guess, and it's unresolved for some people, is will Greenlaw reprise his role from Aziz Al-Shaair? Al-Shaair did really well last year, 111 tackles in just 13 games. He was really productive and made a lot of fantasy managers very happy who'd got him up the waiver wire. But I think we start to see this as Greenlaw made his way back towards the very end of the year. He was the favorite linebacker there when healthy, and even in fact when he wasn't completely healthy. So yeah, I think Greenlaw's the man to own there. I think he's a great value right now. And going back to those cliches, he seems really happy with what D'Amico Ryans has planned for him. He's talking about his comfort level in the defense, what he's been asked to do, etc. So yeah, it's going to be Greenlaw and Warner, in my opinion, as the every down linebackers over there. Al-Shaair moving into sort of a part time role again. Yeah, go pick him up. I think he's a really good guy to be picking up at this point. LB41. What's your take?
I mean, LB41, Addy, especially around some of those names that we're mentioning here, Camus Grugier-Hill, Kenneth Murray.
Yeah.
Give me all the Dre Greenlaw. It seems like there's a little bit of reciprocity bias happening here where we loved what Al-Shaair did for us. We're like, all right, this guy really came through. I think he was IDP MVP for one of our contributors last season on that episode. So we feel almost obligated to then take him again, or we just forget that he was filling in for an injured Dre Greenlaw.
Yeah.
And if you're paying attention to what's happening in San Francisco, they're telegraphing to us that it is going to be Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. Al-Shaair, great injury replacement type of guy, but I'm with Jace that give me all the Dre Greenlaw, especially at that price.
Yeah, Dre Greenlaw is actually good. I've been doing some digging, just looking at like old college stats for a lot of these linebackers. Dre Greenlaw was productive like his freshman year. It looks like he had 95 total tackles his freshman year. He ended up with 321 total tackles in college, and that's like there's not a lot of guys that hit the 300. So, yeah, I mean, I think Greenlaw is is the second best linebacker there. I do have some pause, though. I mean, there is Azeez Al-Shaair there. I mean, he was solid last year. If Greenlaw slips up at all, I mean, we know kind of the culture of that team. Like, they're not afraid to, like, just yank somebody and replace them. You could easily see that happening if Greenlaw slips up. So, I mean, I like Greenlaw, but I like some other linebackers kind of in his range. I prefer to draft like a Josie Jewell, someone that I know that is going to be the LB1 to start. But yeah, I like Greenlaw. I'm just not going to have him on a lot of my teams, right? There's just other linebackers in that range I like a lot more. David Longs, Matt Milanos, those guys are always slept on too. Like, I prefer that route just because they have less competition. I do think Greenlaw is the second best linebacker there, but Azeez had a solid year. He is there. I don't like any risk. I don't like any risk at all, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I will say, I don't want it to be misinterpreted that our affection and sunny outlook for Dre Greenlaw is a negative outlook for Azeez Al-Shaair. He's a guy that I find myself targeting a lot in these IDP-only best balls.
He's an even better value.
Yeah, exactly. You can get him. I mean, I'm getting him like in the 20th-plus round of IDP-only best balls. So,
and that's the thing, because Fred Warner is undeniably the one.
Yes.
So there's going to be two guys fighting over that second linebacker spot. I'm not going to be targeting that guy in my drafts. Just, again, like I said, there's just other guys that I like more that are more safe. Don't have to worry about a third guy.
So whether it is Dre Greenlaw or Azeez Al-Shaair that you want to target at their current cost, there is, I think, some meat on the bone there in San Francisco.
Definite upside picks.
Yes, exactly. Depending on your risk tolerance, we'll see if those guys end up on your rosters. But this next name, not just because it's a cool name, Jace, but because we do love the breakout potential of this next guy. Who's up next on your list?
Yeah. So breakout. Yeah. Salanoa Fofanga. I mean, you know, he didn't set the world alight in the limited opportunities he had last year, but it's not easy to do when you're only playing sort of 400 snaps, I think. So he was a bit up and down, as you imagine, as you expect from a rookie, especially rookies taken in the fifth round, right? So, but yeah, there's this sort of low level buzz about him in the sort of Twitterverse right now, and you've heard his name being thrown around, guys, right? So he's got the as you mentioned, he's got the cool hair, he's got the cool name. But I think it goes beyond some of that service level stuff. He's going as the safety 54 around the same place as Cameron Bynum. He's not even assured of a sort of a prominent role, and guys like Julian Blackman. So yeah, I'm taking the finger over those guys again all day long. Now this nomination isn't really a statement about the finger's ability level. It's more about just the opportunity that's been presented to him, I think. The departure of Jaquiski Tartt to the Eagles opens the door for many more snaps for Hufanga going into 2022. So I'm excited about that. One thing I'm not hugely excited about is the idea that obviously the 49ers have continued this idea of a too high safety approach. So, you know, Hufanga's not going to be in the box a huge amount relative to some of the others that we love at that safety position. But, you know, at that point in the draft, safety 54, we're following snap volume rather than trying to tick off, or satisfy all the criteria for what we're looking for in a leading safety. So, yeah, I'm buying a lot of Hufanga as I say, what I think is a bargain Ray. Did you guys see the hit he put on the Packers Tyler Goodson in the preseason game? He can hit when he wants to. It was pretty impressive. If you haven't watched it, if any listeners haven't seen it, go and look it up. It's pretty cool.
There you go. We know he can lay the wood if need be, Addy. I think my only hesitation here with Hufanga is that I personally fell into the trap of waiting for Jaquiski Tartt to do something, right? It's the stick figure poking the thing with the stick and saying, do something meme, like in real life. And he just never did. But I think what's been eye-opening for me this offseason, seeing Tartt go to Philadelphia and I think there was some carryover belief that this is a good player who should help solidify that position for the Eagles. And now reports out of training camp that Tart might not even make the roster for the Eagles. Maybe we were just betting on a bum horse in San Francisco with Jaquaski Tart, and we shouldn't necessarily assign that same kind of tepid expectation for Talanoa Hufanga.
Yeah, it definitely could be the case. I mean, Tart just may not be that good. I don't know, though. San Francisco just hasn't had a good safety or a really productive safety in a while, it seems. But yeah, I think Hufanga, I mean, the ADP is crazy. He's such a value. I mean, people, just, he's at the very end of your drafts. And all those IDP-only best balls we're doing, dude, he's like around 25 pick,
like,
typically.
That's the last round of the draft type.
I mean,
of
he's
pick.
In that 24 to 25 range, I'd say. So, yeah, I mean, so he's just free. And yeah, I think that nothing but upside. Is he gonna be like a league winner for you? No, probably not. But he's just a nice, solid safety 2-3. You know, I think he's not going to be maybe a starter for you, but he's a nice depth piece for your rosters. Looking at kind of how they've been using him so far, I've got his PFF stuff pulled up. He has played 2 snaps on the line, 4 in the box, 12 at free safety, 1 in the slot. So, I mean, that's
okay.
He's
a deep safety type.
Yeah, primarily playing deep, but he is getting a few snaps in the box, a few on the line. So, we'll see how that usage goes. We'll definitely be tracking that stuff.
And I think the point here, Jace, is not that this, like Adam said, is going to be a league winner, a top 12 safety, but can he emerge as one of those late dart throws who becomes a contributor for your IDP rosters? I think the answer is yes.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we know safety is a really flat position beyond the very small group of players who we can fairly accurately predict will be one of, in the top 10 of the position. So if I'm going to be targeting a position group that's really flat, a huge pool of players that could potentially do well, potentially sort of find their way into that sort of, maybe safety 15, safety sort of 20, 25 range, I'm going to be targeting the guys at the back end of the ADP in that sense. So I think Hufanga is one of those guys. So yeah, I'm happy to take a gamble on him. Like you say, he's probably not going to set the world alight, but he's got every chance to do as well as I think a lot of other safeties that are being taken a lot earlier than him in the draft. So.
Yeah, it's like sometimes we're just looking for those dart throws that can become something. And Talanoa Hufanga has all the markings of a safety who could become something for your rosters. And we love that at the cost. Another player we love at cost, Jace, is Josh Sweat from the Philadelphia Eagles. Sweat was a player who got paid by Philadelphia somewhat surprisingly. And then we've seen a lot of turnover with this edge rushing group. They bring back Derek Barnett on a pretty small contract. We've seen reports out of training camp. Brandon Graham is running with the twos and is very happy about that. So we know the interior of this defensive line, Jace, we joked, is beefaroni with all of these humongous human beings that they have taking up space here in the middle. So for where Josh Sweat is going, we talk about players who unquestionably have that role locked up. There is no question that Josh Sweat is the number one edge rusher for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's just a matter of what does that look like? What are we willing to pay for that? And do we think that's actually something that we should be seeking out for our IDP rosters? What say you?
Yeah, I mean, Sweat's really intrigued me. But you have those one or two guys that for no good reason, you just follow their careers really, really closely. Sweat's that guy for me. He's always intrigued me. I think one of the first articles I wrote for IDP guys might have been about sort of Sweat as he was coming into the league. And I just really like what I saw. Huge name in college, obviously. Also a massive shame he had those major injuries, but it just makes you sort of root for him. Everyone loves a bounce back player, don't they? Someone that's going to defy the odds and become what they should have been had they not suffered a freak injury. So what puts me off with Sweat, obviously last year was a career year for him, but what puts me off a little bit is the sort of the mediocre pressure rate. So his career year came on the back of obviously increased volume, and an excellent finishing rate. And that's somewhat of a red flag, a small one, but a bit of a red flag to me. But hey, you know, as you say, it's about value. He was the edge 49 in recent mocks, behind guys like Denico Autry, Travis Gibson. I take sweat over those guys quite easily. Great value, really, for a, you know, 25-year-old super athletic edge rusher, someone with a clear path to loads of snaps, and someone who has, looking at his PFF grades, got better in each of his years in the league. So yeah, I like Sweat. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic about his outlook moving forward, but yeah, good call.
Yeah, Josh Sweat, Addy, I'm just looking at the 6 completed best balls that we've done, IDP only. His highest was DL21, his lowest DL50.
Yeah.
Most of the drafts, he's going in that 35 to 45 range.
The DL21's insane.
It's a little high. That's a little rich. I'm not taking him there, but in those 35 to 45 right. range, absolutely.
Yeah, I've never seen him go. I don't think I was in that best ball draft.
That was actually your pick, Addy.
Okay, that's right. That was auto pick. But yeah, I do like Josh Sweat. I mean, he actually has some help on the opposite edge now, you know, with Hassan Reddick there. So that's nice. Who would you rather have, Hassan Reddick or Josh Sweat?
Boy, that's a good question.
I mean, Sweat's definitely the better value. I think Reddick's probably in that DL 25 to 30 range, I would imagine.
I'm probably going with Sweat at value, even though I do like Reddick.
Yeah, because, I mean, Sweat is 26. Mm-hmm. And then, if you look at the profile, he had a 9.71 RAS score, ran a 4.53 40, 96 percentile speed score. Sweat's pretty good. We probably haven't seen the best of him. I think now's a pretty good – he's, again, nice upside play. You know, if you're waiting on defensive line or edge, I mean, Sweat is a really nice upside play.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You nailed it. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah, go ahead, Jace.
I was just going to say, you nailed it there. We probably haven't seen the best of him. You know, he's shown this ability to continue to get better, even though he's playing more and more. So, yeah, we probably haven't seen the best of him. And I'm happy to invest a, you know, again, 25, 35, you know, DL 50. That's just crazy. I'd snack him away before that myself. That's your other question. No, much prefer Sweat to Reddick. I'm not the biggest Reddick fan, but
same here.
So here's a question for you, Jace. With Chase Young going on the PUP list, which means he will miss the first 4 games of the 2022 NFL season, which of the Sweat Bros would you take at cost? We mentioned that Josh Sweat going in that like 35 to 45 range in the IDP only best balls that we've done. I just looked up Montez Sweat. He's going in that like 15 to 24 range. So who would you rather have at their current cost, Montez Sweat or Josh Sweat?
Really good question. If you'd have asked me a year ago, it would have been an easy one. I'd have gone for Montez Sweat, but last year wasn't quite as good for him as 2020. So it's kind of opened the door a little bit to maybe it being Josh in that case. But I think I'd still take Montez. Close call though.
Yeah, Addy, Montez Sweat, Josh Sweat. Which of the Sweaty Bros you going with?
I'll probably go Sweat.
That's a great call. I think I'd go Sweat as well.
I'll go Sweat.
Yeah, that's a great. Either way, you're sweating, and either way, you're happy about it.
I'd go Josh.
I think I go Josh as well.
Just because I don't want to burn the early pick on Montez.
Yeah.
I do like Montez Sweat. I think he is. He's probably a little underrated at this point.
I think so too.
But yeah, I don't want to have to take use the high pick on him.
If you're looking at Montez Sweat as a top 12 guy, then you're getting him between 15 and 24. That's definitely a discount. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at Josh Sweat as a top 24 guy and you can get him in like the 40 to 50 range, that's an even nicer discount. So I'll take the bigger discount on Josh Sweat. So, Sweaty Bros, what us talk about some linebackers, because this is another position group that is going to be interesting to see how it unfolds for IDP this season. We know that TJ Edwards, Kaiser White appear to be the starters there in Philadelphia, but we have as a sleeper, Nakobe Dean, the rookie out of Georgia. And Jace, the reason we want to bring his name up is because in fantasy, we have a tendency to overweight what happens at the beginning of the season. Those first few weeks. Don't get me wrong. That is important. You don't want to start out 0-4 because you've got your eyes on weeks 6, 7, and 8. But I think there is it is useful to imagine how could things play out for certain teams. We've seen in limited flashes so far this preseason, Nakobe Dean has performed well. The drumbeat out of camp has been very positive for the rookie. And so talking about Nakobe Dean as a sleeper, this is a take him late, stash him on your bench. If he gets the opportunity, then it could be very profitable, high upside. We're talking back end LB1, LB2 possibility if he inherits a big enough role for IDP. Is that going to happen? Who knows? TJ Edwards, Kaiser White looked locked in there. But let's take a dart throw and see what happens. What say you?
Yeah, I really like Dean. I love his dynasty outlook, especially. So when you're talking about him as a sleeper, someone that can really come on towards the end of the year, one thing I tend to look for in situations like these is contract situations. So Edwards and White are only under contract this year. There's nothing beyond that for either guy unless one of them gets extended. And it seems very unlikely to me that they'll extend both players. It wouldn't surprise me massively if Dean came on a little bit towards the end of the year, started getting even more snaps, potentially replacing one of those two players. I mean, Edwards was super productive last year in that role. He went through a really nice spell of earning me huge points for some of my fantasy rosters, and I was really appreciative of that. He deserves some kudos for all that, but talking about a productive role, if Dean gets into that role and he's potentially got a higher ceiling than someone like an Edwards, for sure, it makes you excited as to what he could become, I think. So, yeah, definite fan of the idea of him being a sleeper. And there's a little but here. We've kind of been burned with some of these rookie linebackers in recent seasons. Zaven Collins, Jameen Davis. So there's a very small part of me that's feeling a little bit reluctant to sort of anoint Dean as this guy that's definitely going to take over. But yeah, look, I'm British, right? So we don't get too excited about things too often, unless it's a cup of tea or cure for things. But yeah, I like Dean. I think it's a good call, him being a sleeper. Yeah, either White or Edwards, I think, is going to be gone, possibly both, by next year. And yeah, Dean, especially in Dynasty, go grab him if you can.
Yeah, absolutely, Addy. These linebackers, even though we like them as the starters, these are roles that they seem locked into, decent players. Edwards, Kaiser White, jettisoned from his original team. Like Jay said, especially in Dynasty, Dean is an excellent stash, but even for redraft, he could absolutely have some value this season.
Yeah, I think so. If one of those guys, Kaiser or TJ, gets injured, I mean, Nakobe Dean comes on the field and immediately balls out, you can't.
I don't think you can go back to
right,
those
you
guys.
Can't. You probably can't go
they
back.
They probably get Wally Pipps.
So that's a very, possible situation. But yeah, I'm with Jace. I'm kind of over trying to figure out these linebackers, these rookie linebackers. I love Dean for Dynasty, of course. Yeah, I mean, it's all set up for him. He's already looked really good in the preseason. The buzz has been great about him. So, yes, I love Nakobe Dean in Dynasty. He should probably be a top 20 Dynasty linebacker for you already.
I would say so.
I think he actually is for us. But, yeah, I'm not going to draft him in 2022 for redraft just because, I mean, he still is going to be too high for me.
And there may be situations where you can pick him up. Mm-hmm. Maybe not at the start of the season, but once we see TJ Edwards, Kaiser White getting all of the linebacker snaps for the Eagles and someone dumps him to make room for a waiver wire pickup, pick him up and stash him if you want.
In fact, I'm not even sure that Dean may have a higher ADP than TJ Edwards.
Wow.
I mean, we could pull that up in best ball in those drafts, but I feel like Dean's usually going ahead of TJ Edwards.
Yeah.
Also, a little funny little note about Kaiser White. You need to put some respect on his name. 99.0 PFF preseason grade right now.
99?
Yes, sir.
So basically playing perfect football.
Large sample size of five snaps.
I was going to say five snaps. I was going to say, what is this, one or two snaps that he's actually been in here?
Right?
Oh, he had a pick six?
I think he did.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that'll do it for you. That'll earn you that perfect PFF grade. I think Kaiser White's a good player. Like Jay said, pay attention to the contract situation in Dynasty, especially as you go into your rookie drafts, to see which player, even if they're blocked for the current season, could be looking at walking into a full-time role if the team doesn't re-sign the current veterans on the roster. Let's shift gears here a little bit, Jace, and go to the desert to talk about the next team, the Arizona Cardinals. Who is the first player up from Arizona that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, so this is going to raise some eyebrows, and I know it's going to sound like I'm about five years too late here, but hear me out. So, stud, I use this term loosely for him at this point in his career, is J.J. Watt. Now, you know, he's not the guy he once was. He's not the player he once was, and that's been obvious for a couple of years now. Perhaps the tail end of his career has been ravaged with injury. He's missed huge chunks of time in four of the last six seasons, including 10 games last year. But he can still play. Granted, he only managed a single sack in the seven games he played last year, but he still brought an impressive amount of pressure. He had a four-game stretch between weeks three and week six where he had 22 pressures. That's really impressive. This is not a player who has all of a sudden forgotten to get after a quarterback. A lot of what we were talking about earlier on with DeMarcus Lawrence kind of applies to Watt here. Granted, Watt's a few years older, but you know, he's still a very good player. I think he's better than most to give him credit for. His PFF pass rush grade was eighth amongst all interior defensive linemen in 2021. I say interior linemen, but it's important to note that Watt's one of those guys that does move between the interior and the outside quite a lot. Other guys, Leonard Williams, Cam Hayward, etc., do something similar. So Watt has added value in any leagues where he's got a DT designation. So we're generally talking about sort of NFL true position type leagues there. One thing that does stand out for me about Watt, obviously we know that pressure rate is generally quite indicative of future success as far as sack numbers are concerned. So we want guys with the highest pressure rates. We also know that sort of finishing rate is a much more unstable metric. And we know that finishing rates usually revert to the mean when sort of extrapolated over multiple seasons. So we want to kind of avoid the lucky guys with high finishing rates and go after those guys with low finishing rates because their value tends to be a little better. What I've been looking at recently is the difference between pressure rates and finishing rates for certain players. And someone like Watt, he has the biggest difference between his pressure rate, which was pretty good, and his finishing rate, which was pretty terrible last year. So he's one of those guys, I think, that can bounce back and produce at a level that you know, could be really helpful for fantasy managers. Probably only worth rostering in redraft and fantasy managers that are in win now mode, but he can be had for next to nothing. And I've had some success in the past by picking up guys like him, almost seeing them as one or two year rentals and sort of help them pitch those sort of fantasy rosters that are close to winning, sort of over the top a little bit. So that's where I stand. What about you guys? Am I crazy? Be honest.
No, Eddie, I think there is something to be said. If we had a value category, I think that is probably the appropriate label for Watt here, because you look at where he's going in these best ball drafts that we've done. And again, that skews it a little bit because you're swinging for high upside. So a lot of riskier redraft plays get pushed up in ADP. But I just look, J.J. Watt going between DL47 and DL61.
Yeah.
So he's essentially an afterthought.
Yeah.
One of the greatest defensive players of our generation going as the DL 5 or 6 for some of these teams. So that's what makes him interesting to me is, A, he's one of the greatest players ever. Hopefully he'll be healthy this year. We've had some lingering injury concerns, so that's always in the back of my mind. But my goodness, at that range, yes, please.
Yeah. Yeah, and he, I mean, like Jace mentioned, I mean, he was great with the pressures last year, just wasn't converting on the sacks. And he was starting to heat up before he got hurt. I think he had, like, looking at his log, he had a 21 points, 22 points, and then he got hurt. 30 snaps that the week he got hurt, only 6 points. But still, he was starting to come on, starting to convert some of those pressures. Yeah, I love J.J. Watt. Man, Arizona really needs J.J. Watt.
They need him. Chandler Jones gone.
Yeah, that defense looks not
that defense
great.
Looks stinky.
Looks pretty bad. Yeah, the Zaven Collins news hasn't been really what we want to see.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in just a second.
But yeah, I love J.J. Watt. I think he's a great pick in your drafts.
Yeah, J.J. Yep. Watt. You're banking on the pedigree. You love the value. He's absolutely going to be necessary for the Arizona Cardinals to have any chance of fielding a competent defense in 2022. Jace, but I feel like if you thought you were going out on an island with J.J. Watt, I feel like this next pick, like Adam said, based on recent news, maybe even more of a limb that you're going out on here. Who's your next guy?
Yeah, maybe so. So Zaven Collins, this is when we're talking about sort of scouring a roster, trying to find a guy to talk about. You mentioned the Cardinals defense, and they are it's a weird setup they've got going there. They've got some players who are sort of supremely talented or considered so coming into the league that have just not been as good as we hoped they would be. Perhaps it's something to do with the role they're in, you know, Simmons perhaps, or they just haven't yet lived up to expectations. And, you know, Collins is one of those guys. So, I mean, everyone knows how disappointing his rookie season was. First round pick expected to slide into this starting spot alongside Simmons. Then Jordan Hicks expected to be traded. Didn't happen. We know how this all worked out, right? So I'm going over old ground. But fast forward a year, Hicks is gone. Simmons is seemingly slated to perform a similar role to the one he had last year, where he moves around a little more than the majority of other inside linebackers. So I'm kind of tentatively expecting Collins to be the full-time guy playing in a more orthodox role, which should be good for his tackle volume. And obviously the reason I say tentatively is probably the thing you alluded to there is the presence of Nick Vigil. You know, Mike covered him with John, I think, in the last pod that came out earlier in the week. But Vigil has this really, really annoying habit of limiting the value of other linebackers on the teams he plays for. You know, finding his way onto the field somehow and stealing snaps. And, you know, if Collins doesn't impress, if you can't turn things around, then yeah, I can definitely see the same thing happening here. So it might sound I'm talking down about Collins a little bit here, but I think he's got the draft capital to warrant or to justify giving him a shot here. If he does take that role, will he be uber productive? I'm not entirely sure. Hicks barely surpassed 100 tackles despite playing 1,000 snaps and needed some big plays to really boost his fantasy value. So, yeah, I think Collins could still break out despite what we've seen in the early part of this year so far.
Yeah, Addy, I want to set you up here. It feels like Zaven Collins is the IDP Roshark test, where you kind of look at it and you see what you want to see. Mm-hmm. We have been the ultimate fans of Zaven Collins on this show. We famously called for hashtag Zaven season mm-hmm. with Nate Tice earlier this year. But boy, the stuff coming out of camp and the preseason has me very, very concerned. Where are you on Zaven season as we stand here on August 23rd?
I think you just got to stand strong. You know, if your opinion is that you like Zaven Collins and you think he's going to be good when he gets an opportunity, I think you have to continue to ride that. And I think a lot of the stuff that we're seeing and hearing, I think it might be noise, which I'm fine with. You know, I mean, if you're drafting right now, I mean, his ADP reflects the recent news and everything. Like, this is a guy I just took him in the IDP Invitational, and I got him as my third linebacker, and I think it was like probably linebacker 30.
Wow.
Yeah, sign me up for that, dude. I mean, that if it turns out to where Zaven Collins gets all the snaps this year, that's a league winner.
Absolutely.
I mean, so I'm definitely going to take that shot now that his ADP is dropping. I mean, if you were drafting in June, you had to probably use like a top 20 pick to get Zaven Collins. That ain't the case now. So I'm all about it. I mean, again, even if it seems like Nick Vigil is going to get the job to start, he's still Nick Vigil.
That's right.
You know, he's still Nick Vigil. He's still gonna suck. Zaven might get his opportunity at some point. And I think he definitely would. I mean, if that is the way it goes, I would still have Zaven Collins on speed dial if he's on the waivers.
And that's the thing too. I feel like there is sort of a binary here of Zaven Collins is going to get his opportunity and be this league winner that we've all expected and hoped and waited for, or he's just not going to get it. And he is going to be a complete first round bust and washed out of the league. And all of this hope is going to go down the drain.
It's a really bad look for Arizona, though.
Yes.
I mean, they've had, because I mean, think about with Hassan Reddick, they didn't know what to do with him. Now they got Isaiah Simmons, where they're still trying to figure out what to do with him. Zaven Collins, I mean, would he be better suited playing more edge snaps? I think that's probably part of the best part of his game. So maybe I don't know that they're really using these guys properly. I'm not a fan of Vance Joseph. He's a hard ass. I hate coaches like that. They get, because players get in the doghouse way too easily. But again, there ain't a lot of talent there in Arizona. So I'm going to take my shot on Zaven Collins because I do think he has league winning upside.
Yeah, we just have to cross our fingers that even if it is Nick Vigil running out there as the full-time linebacker to start the season, that Zaven earns his way onto the field, and once he has that role, never relinquishes it to Jordan Hicks, Nick Vigil, whatever other scrub linebacker you want to throw in there. Hopefully he can take hold of this job and never let it go, because we are hoping for that breakout. And Jace, if the price is coming down on Zaven Collins, I'll be in at that cost. The cost that he was going in June is a top 20 guy, probably a little too rich for the uncertainty that we face now.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you know, if that's exactly it. If you have Collins on a roster, and if your rosters are big enough, Nick Vigil is going to cost you peanuts. You might as well get both guys, and then whatever happens, you know, hopefully they don't share snaps, but whatever happens, whoever wins that role, you're in a good place. That's my approach with these things. But yeah, as you say, Collins' value has been plummeting as a result of what we're seeing so far. I'm pretty happy with that. If you've got him, you've probably still got him from last year in Dynasty, right? You haven't really gone out and targeted him as a linebacker that you want this season. But yeah, in redraft, wait till his value plummets and then go out and get him.
That's right. Next up here, we have, going back to the NFC East, the Washington Commanders. Still don't like the name. The uniforms are okay. I don't know why it has like a black stripe across the sleeve when their colors are like burgundy and gold, but that's neither here nor there. We want to talk about amazing hair, amazing production, and a stud player. It's Cole Holcomb, played 99% of the snaps across 16 games, 14.1 points per game last season, with 142 total tackles, a sack, two INTs, two tackles for loss. We know John Macri is probably Cole Holcomb's number one fan. If he wins a championship while rostering Cole Holcomb, he is going to grow the mullet out, Jay. So if for no other reason than seeing John Macri with a really bad haircut, there is so many reasons to be excited about Cole Holcomb for 2022. And I don't feel like, even with all the buzz that he's been getting, he's still a guy that you have to pay a tremendous price for. And as a three-down linebacker, he just seems locked in and consistent, and not a guy who's going to crap your team week to week. There aren't a lot of things to dislike about Cole Holcomb, Jace.
No, he won me over. So at the beginning of last year, I wasn't as sold in on him as others were at that point in time. But yeah, he won me over. He's got the tackle volume. You know, he was pretty impressive with a big play last year as well. We kind of hope for those to continue. And as you say, that mullet is just a thing of beauty. What's not to love? I was looking at his tackle volume compared to the rest of the Commanders last year. I wasn't surprised to see that he led the team in tackles, but was surprised to see he led them by such a margin. 43 more tackles than Cam Curl, impressive stuff, right? So, yeah, going into next year or this year, in fact, he's the sort of the unquestioned leader. Del Rio, Jack Del Rio has been talking about how he's how Holcomb's taken on a more of a leadership role. Again, cliche perhaps, but I'd rather hear positive cliches than sort of again things like nagging injuries or guys that aren't quite finding their way. So. The one reservation I have, and it's not a massive one, is what's happening with his contract. And he's one of those guys, though, that I think, whether they extend him or not, and I think they probably will do, he's probably going to be, in fact, he's more than likely going to earn a full-time starting role elsewhere. So it might not affect his value too much, even if the team didn't extend him. So, yeah, I'm a Holcomb fan. I like the call. He is a stud.
The other thing worth mentioning here, Addy, and maybe we were just a year early on this, but Jamin Davis, his running mate, who I famously and regrettably planted a flag on last season.
Flag plant episode coming soon!
Yeah, next couple weeks from now. Tune in to see how badly we whiffed this year. Now, I'm going much safer and not touching any rookie linebackers on that episode this year. But Jamin Davis from John Macri's, Week 2 of the preseason takeaway article over at PFF.com. Check that out if you haven't already. John is doing the Lord's work watching these god-awful preseason games and giving us the takeaways that we need to know for IDP. From this article, second-year linebacker Jamin Davis also played 100% of the team's defensive snaps during his time on the field for the second straight week. It's looking more like Davis could be in for a much larger role this season than the lowly 56% he played as a rookie. So, does the possible presence of Jamin Davis in a more full-time role give you any hesitation at all when drafting Cole Holcomb?
Nah. Nope.
No?
Nah.
Me neither.
Nah. Cole Holcomb's going to eat, man. I mean, like I said, I've been looking at some of the college stats. Just, I'm not sure how, the stuff's going to translate. We'll see. But, I mean, Cole Holcomb's been one of those guys that just soaks up tackles. Every year, he's going to get, looking back at North Carolina, his sophomore year, 115 tackles. Junior year, 93 tackles. Senior year, 104 tackles. I mean, that's what the dude does. He knows how to tackle, and he has hella good hair.
I was going to say, the lettuce is there. The tackle numbers are there. Sounds like, Jace, you're not at all concerned if we see Jamin Davis in a expanded role for 2022, impacting Cole Holcomb's production significantly.
No, as I say, I mean, Cole, there's only so many full-time linebackers in this league right now. And Holcomb, a little bit like the Roquan Smith situation, right? So if he leaves, I'm not too fussed about his value because he's always going to land up on it. In a team that plays him almost every, if not every down. So I don't really see his value changing massively. And the same is true with Holcomb. Wherever he goes, he's going to be a full-time linebacker. He wouldn't accept anything less at this point in his career, not while he's been performing at the level he has. So, I'm more concerned about the presence of Davis. Not at all.
So next up here on the list, a player you just mentioned, Jace, and we have him labeled as a sleeper. I think you could probably attach the stud label to this guy, but because of the ambiguity, because of the presence of Landon Collins last season, because of the Bobby McCain kind of interference early on in the year, we didn't quite see the role that we wanted for Cam Curl. But again, referencing John's article, go back and check it out. The usage has been elite for Cam Curl in terms of IDP production. He has that box role locked up, and John has him ranked as his number three safety for the 2022 season. Jace, I think one of the easiest calls in all of IDP is that Cam Curl is about to break out in a big way.
Yeah, exactly. I love Cam Curl. As you said, the box role leech that was Landon Collins is now gone. Curl really improved as a tackler last season. That was probably my one reservation about him after the 2020 season. He missed a lot of tackles last year. Put the numbers here. I think it's like 7% of tackles. It's less than 7% of tackles. Fantastic, really, for Curl. So he's making the most of all of his opportunities. there's a lot less question marks or concerns hanging over someone like Cam Curl than there is for several of the other top safeties. The only three, I was thinking about this, so the only three safeties I would confidently place ahead of Curl really for this season would be Derwin James, Jeremy Chin, and Budda Baker, although he's a lot closer, I think, to Curl. I'm really happy with him. I think John having him as his number three safety is a good shout. I'm all over Curl this year.
Addie, you have famously been talking up Jeremy Chin as just sort of a guy, not someone who has been a difference maker thus far. So I'm curious. I think we all have King Derwin atop safety mountain right now. Mm-hmm. But with what we've seen from Cam Curl thus far in the preseason, where is he in your 2022 pecking order for safeties?
Yeah, he's surging. I mean, he's a top 12 option at this point. Just with, you know, Collins gone. And then, yeah, look at the usage right now. I mean, two snaps on the line, 34 in the box, 5 at free safety, 7 at slot, 1 outside. So, I mean, that is just... That's got to be right next to Jeremy Chin as far as like who's playing the most box snaps right now. Love Cameron Curl. He's a good value too. I mean, this guy usually isn't being drafted ahead of safety 12. Pull up the ADP if you could, baby.
I will do that because I was curious here. This a lot of these best balls wrapped before we started seeing where Curl was going to be used by Washington this season.
Well, we should have seen it coming, you know? I mean, that's what he's primarily, that's the role he's kind of been in when Landon Collins isn't there. That's how he was when he was a rookie. Cameron Curl, he's actually good, too. He's a fun player to watch. I really like him.
Absolutely. Curl. Graded 69.4 overall. Nice. That tackling grade, 82.4. So you wonder why they have confidence putting this guy in the box. It's like Jace alluded to, improved as a tackler, 82.4 is damn near elite in terms of your tackle ability. So the highest he went in our best balls, DB20, and the lowest, DB23.
That's great.
Yeah, he's right in that DB24, DB21. So somewhere in that 20 to 25 range for Cam Curl. So will that be different now? Probably. With some of the usage and some of the hype that we've gotten. Yeah, some of the tweets from John single-handedly is driving Cam Curl's ADP up. But, man, even if he gets driven into, say, the low teens, if he's somewhere in that 12 to 15 range.
Still could be a value.
For a guy that has top five upside, that is a value, Jace.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, question. Do you think John ever uses his situation, his reach to...
Yes, for evil.
For evil, of course.
I'm thinking it's definitely a way to go, I think, isn't it?
I think the better question, does he ever use it for good?
Yeah, has he ever used it for good? If we see him start pushing some anti-Derwin narratives, then we'll know he's truly gone all the way to the dark side and been corrupted. So,
I'll definitely pull him out on that. I'm a Chargers fan. Derwin is my favorite player in the NFL. So if I hear any Derwin James slander from John's corner, I'll be the first to call him out on that for sure.
Yeah, we'll know that he's truly gone all the way evil. Even, he's a little bit evil right now for sure. But I think the Cam Curl call, especially.
Jace, did you know that John doesn't like bacon?
John doesn't like bacon?
Yeah.
I liked him until now.
I know, right? We said we're going to get him down here to Kentucky and just force feed him bacon.
I don't know, but I don't trust anyone that doesn't like bacon.
Yeah, it's real questionable what's going on in his heart and where the happiness level is in his... Now, maybe his cholesterol's good. His happiness, though, leaves a little bit to be desired there. So,
I just unfollowed him on Twitter now. He's unfollowed now.
There we go. We should all do that.
Bacon gang. Let's go.
Bacon gang, show up on Twitter. What's up? So just unfollow John en masse. But the Cam Curl take, the bacon take we know is, indefensibly awful, but the Cam Curl take has been spot on and confirmed by the preseason. So Cole Holcomb, Cam Curl, Couple nice options there in Washington, but let's shift gears to the defending Super Bowl champions. And it's weird to look at this first player's name on your list here, Jace, and say Los Angeles Rams, but who are we kicking things off with from L.A.?
Okay, yes, this is an easy call for me, Bobby Wagner. So yeah, as you said, it's going to be weird watching him suit up in a new jersey in 2022, isn't it? It's going to take some getting used to. But what will, I think, be familiar to us is how Wagner is just going to be flying around the field every down, doing his thing. Now, you know, Wagner's wasn't quite the same player last year as we've seen in years before. His coverage, tackling and run defense PFF grades were in the bottom three of the years in his career. And in fact, PFF graded his last two games in weeks 15 and 16 as two of the worst since he's entered the league back in 2012. But, you know, let's not overreact. Compared to his peers, I think Wagner still compares favorably in pretty much every way. He was so good that he's got further to fall than the vast majority of other players. Still recorded a career high in tackles. And helped by the fact that he remained healthy most of the season, finished seventh in total snaps among all linebackers. Ernest Jones and Troy Reader, for the most part, interchanged that position for the Rams in 2021, managed 148 tackles between them. I wouldn't be in the least bit surprised if Wagner managed that on his own in 2022, health permitting, obviously. He's my LB3 in redraft, and it's actually quite close at the top. So yeah, Wagner, he's my stud. I know from listening to your other pods that you guys are fans. Tell me what your thoughts are.
Addy, did you move Roquan back to number one redraft for you with the news he's going to play out his contract?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so is B-Wags now number B-Wags two for you?
Is two, yeah.
I don't, even if he's a slightly diminished version of the Bobby Wagner we've seen over the past decade in Seattle, I mean, in that Los Angeles linebacking core, we've been searching for the next Corey Littleton, which is weird to say given how horrendous he's been outside of LA. But now you drop in one of the, I mean, arguably top three or four linebackers for the real NFL and for IDP over the past 10 years into that situation. That's just dynamite. I don't know. Are we missing something here with Bobby Wagner?
No, I mean, I think if you're using a top pick on a guy, right, you want to have like a sure thing. I mean, there's not many more sure things than Bobby Wagner this year, right?
That's right.
He's just going to 150 tackles easy, wouldn't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sign me up. I love Bobby Wagner. I mean, what a hot take there.
Yeah.
I love this guy.
I love this guy. He's just been great. Yeah, he's just a ball player.
But he's awesome, man. I mean, I've gotten him in so many of these drafts. Just, I mean, he's – if I'm picking like – 106.
I was gonna say back half of the first.
Bobby Wagner's gonna be my pick.
That's right. It's that's a great point, Jace, that Adam made. Of if you're picking at the top of drafts, you want certainty, right? I think Sigmund Bloom said it well. He said it's not about finding the highest upside early in your drafts. It's about minimizing risk, right? When you're spending that much on a player, you want safety, security. That really secure floor, right? And so exactly. I don't think, and maybe there are some guys I'm not thinking of, Aaron Donald, his teammate probably is in this category. Mm-hmm. But in terms of at his position and across all of IDP, there probably is no safer bet than Bobby Wagner. Even with a new situation, new team, this guy is a slam dunk pick for 2022.
Exactly. Yeah, you know exactly what you're getting. We've got a decade of production to look back on. He's still a very good player. I mean, his overall PFF grade of 72 still very good. He's just an easy choice, isn't he? It gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling to have him on your team.
I agree. Now let's, instead of stating the obvious, right, with that Bobby Wagner is outrageously good. He's a safe pick at the top of your drafts. Let's pivot to a take that I'm glad Bobby is not here for, in that Ernest Jones, the next player on your list, is receiving a designation that might raise some eyebrows. What are your thoughts on Ernest Jones for 2022?
Yeah, so I've got him down as a bust. So a lot of people in the IDP community won't like this call at all. A lot of people are relying on Jones to take a big step forward this year. And I just want to be clear, right? I don't dislike Jones as a player. I think he showed a lot of promise last year. Had some standout games, Jags game in particular. But it just comes back to my 8 point we made earlier on about other players. It's about opportunity. Where's the opportunity coming from? No team in the NFL is more committed to a single linebacker scheme than the Rams. Wagner will definitely be the every down linebacker there. Are the Rams suddenly going to deploy a much higher percentage of two linebacker sets just to involve Jones? I'm just not ready to accept that they intend to buck that sort of league-wide trend of playing fewer off-ball linebackers than the year before. It's just not something I'm confident is going to happen. And I think now, the hype around Jones has reached a point where people will be disappointed if he doesn't deliver really solid numbers. Going back to that point I made a minute ago, like some of the other players on this list, I want to be clear that this bust nomination isn't a criticism of Jones as a player. I just don't think he's going to meet expectations this year. With that said, I'm very happy to roster him in dynasty formats with one eye on the future. Wagner won't be around forever, I don't think. What better player for Jones to learn from than a future Hall of Famer? So, yeah, that's where I stand on Jones. I'm pretty bullish about this one as well, actually. But as always, I always keep an open mind, or try to keep an open mind to some degree. So if it doesn't play out in the way I expect, and Jones goes on to, earn 800, 900 snaps this year somehow and deliver, 80 to 100 tackles and perform in the way that people are hoping he will, then I'll be the first to hold my hands up and say, I was wrong. But I just don't see it happening.
What's yeah, Eddie, thoughts? I think if I can sort of interpret for Babbo, who we know is a huge, huge Ernest Jones fan, he's on full hashtag Ernest Saves Christmas train right now. But I think what you're banking on here is, like Jay said, a change in philosophy. Mm-hmm. We talked about scheme busters, right? These scheme guys busters. Like Ernest Jones, Clay like Quay Walker, that are so good, are so undeniably talented that they force the coach's hand into getting them on the field. I think that's the kind of twofold argument that a pro Ernest Jones manager would make is, I think this dude is going to work his way onto the field. And I think the important piece here is cost. Bobby talked about in his video on Twitter that if you can acquire Jones on the cheap, we're not saying, like, set expectations appropriately. We're not saying roster this guy as your LB1 or LB2. No. Get him on your team with the expectation. If you believe, as Bobby does, that there is a world in which the Rams get these two linebackers on the field and something assembling two full-time roles.
Yeah, and also I think another point, is there a more valuable handcuff if that is going to be the case where it's just Bobby Wagner out there? I don't think so. I mean, if Ernest Jones, if something were to happen to Bobby Wagner, he's not the youngest fella anymore, Ernest Jones would be a league winner.
That's
if,
right.
If he had to step into that role. But yeah, it's definitely a risk, like Jay said it perfectly. We don't hate Ernest Jones dynasty-wise. We love Ernest Jones dynasty-wise. It's just the history of the way the Rams have used the linebackers there. Yeah, is it likely that Bobby Wagner and Ernest Jones both play like over 90% of the snaps? Probably not. But if Ernest Jones can get to 65-70%,
He could
maybe see our lineups. I mean, just yes. Because of the type of player he is, where he has a knack for like making big plays and stuff, like we saw in Super Bowl. And that's the argument. That's really, we just want people to keep an open mind about schemes too. Like just because a team has done a certain thing with schemes doesn't mean they're going to do that forever. So are any of us really loading up on Ernest Jones? I don't think so.
No.
But
yeah,
you know, we still like Ernest Jones for Dynasty. And again, it could change. Who knows? It may change. Sometimes it is it a personnel thing versus what they, you know, what the coach wants to do. Who knows? Maybe they just haven't had the talent like they have now, and it'll change. Probably not likely, but I think you just keep an open mind with stuff like that.
Yeah,
and it's going to be tested this year. I mean, this will be a great situation to watch. Green Bay is going to be one we're very curious about. So we'll know.
We'll know pretty soon. And the thing too, Jace, is Ernest Jones actually good? He's a good player, and that's the thing too. Is like I follow the axiom of like. Teams don't lie with their money. So in bringing in Bobby Wagner, I think the typical reaction would be, well, obviously they don't trust Ernest Jones in that role. I think they had a chance to acquire Bobby freaking Wagner. And this team, known for going out and taking big swings on big-name players, Jalen Ramsey, Von Miller, they had a chance to go get a guy like Bobby Wagner. And so it wasn't necessarily... I don't think an indictment of Ernest Jones as much as it was a chance to get a Hall of Famer to load up for a second Super Bowl run. So will we see the emergence of a profitable second linebacker role? Maybe not, but even as Addy said, there's a path to profitability with Jones if something were to happen to Bobby Wagner, because Jones is hashtag good.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, if I was... perish the thought, right? But if I was in charge of the Rams and I saw Wagner become available and I, you know, my team, my roster was as strong as theirs, I'd go out and get Wagner as well. I don't think, I'm with you, I don't think it's an indictment on against, you know, Jones and what he did at all. And, you know, again, I'm really happy to roster him in Dynasty. If I've got him, I'm feeling quite happy about the fact he's on my roster. I just think expectations are very high right now. And in situations like these before, where there's a very clear, very defined sort of approach in philosophy as far as schemes are concerned, I it's playing the averages, right? So everything I've said today, everything we've said could all be very wrong. But yeah, what's the most likely outcome? That's where my head's at. I'm thinking the most likely thing is that they don't completely change their philosophy. And the most likely outcome, unfortunately, and I roster Jones in some leagues, is that he's probably not going to meet the crazy expectations that we have right now. But again, you know, open-minded. Hopefully he does. I'd be really happy if he did.
Yeah, we'd be thrilled if he exceeded our expectations. And that's the point here, folks, is just calibrate your expectations appropriately. Jones is not going to be a guy that we will recommend putting into lineups early in the season. Mm-hmm. There's just too much uncertainty. There is too much of a track record of the Rams just deploying one linebacker in that full-time role, and we know that's going to be Bobby Wagner. But the optimism is for the what-if potential for this season. And I think all of us would be well-served to explore the what-if scenarios for a lot of these teams, especially when you have a player of Jones's caliber. So let's shift gears here back to the New York Giants and the NFC East. Addy, the first stud we're touching on is one of your favorites, Xavier McKinney. Played 17 games last season, 97% of snaps, 10.9 points per game by Big 3 scoring, and a 75.4 overall grade. I don't know, sort of like Bobby Wagner, not the track record, obviously, of the future Hall of Famer, but Xavier McKinney is a dude we've been on for a while. They have cleared the lane. They have jettisoned a lot of the pieces that were standing, kind of muddying that defensive back room. And it seems like Xavier McKinney is wheels up for 2022 for IDP.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it seems like he's wearing the green dot. So, I mean, he's that tells you all you need to know. I mean, they look at this guy as like the leader of the defense. And yeah, I mean, the guys that have left, Jabril Peppers, Logan Ryan, both of those types were guys that like to play closer to the line of scrimmage, which is, I think, what Xavier McKinney is going to primarily be doing more of. Last year he was playing a lot more deep. But again, that's because, I mean, who else he had around with him that were just better at those roles than he was. not the case now. And also, Xavier McKinney has proved that he can do this. His rookie year, it was a shortened season because, remember, he was hurt early on. But when he did come in at the end of the year, he played primarily in the box. So it's not something that he can't do. And again, he's a great player. I mean, he has continued to develop. I love Xavier McKinney, man. I think that he could easily be a top five safety this year. And he's a fine, you know, you don't have to really overspend to get him. I mean, he's going off the boards like that safety 10 to 15 range, you know, in that 10 to 15 range, I'd say. So I'm fine with that price.
Yeah, Jace, it seems like you mentioned, how do we parse the training camp buzz? How do we deal with the drumbeat, right? We don't want to get too carried away, but we do like when it's positive rather than negative. And we do like the fact that the team did not bring in other DBs to replace Jabril Peppers and Logan Ryan. It seems like it's going to be Julian Love, Xavier McKinney, two guys that were already on the team. There's green dot possibilities with Xavier McKinney. And outside of Blake Martinez, not a lot going on there in that linebacking room in front of him. So I see a lot of positive signs for Xavier McKinney's 2022 outlook. But how do you view Mr. McKinney?
Yeah, he's one of the players I just really enjoy watching. You know, we talk about, stats and metrics and what's predictive and what's not. Sometimes it's just a player you like watching. He's one of those guys for me. Hell of a player. Second year, as you said, played much more. A little up and down at times, but overall he was excellent. And again, you know, kind of expect that from a player who's in his first sort of full-time role in the big leagues. Easily established himself, I think, as one of the best players on that Giants defense. Turned out to be a great investment, early second round pick in that 2020 draft. Do you think what we've seen in the preseason so far in terms of McKinney lining up? I think you mentioned this a minute ago, Adam, about how McKinney is lining up closer to the line of scrimmage. Is something that's going to continue? That would really help his tackle numbers. If I had one criticism, and it's really more of a reservation, I suppose, than the criticism, is that his tackle numbers weren't elite, despite playing somewhere every down after week three or four. So do you think that he is going to continue to play closer to the line of scrimmage? That being the case, you know, his tackle numbers will go up a little bit and he becomes more useful to those sort of non-best ball, non-big play leagues as well?
Yes, I think so, man. I mean, just with Peppers and Logan Ryan both being gone, he's the candidate. I'm trying to pull up. I did some DB alignment data for the site not too long ago. So, all right. So looking at 2021, so he only played 28% of his snaps in the sweet spots, which is DL, box, and slot. In 2020, and it was a smaller sample size because I think he missed like the first 11 weeks or something, he played 61% of his snaps in the sweet spot. So again, this guy can do that. It's just a matter of who was there with him last year, right? Those guys are not there anymore.
Yeah.
And I think he's a more complete player, like, right? I mean, usually when you're going to have a guy in the box, that guy's like more of like your thicker safety types, right? You know, thick with
three C's,
right? So I mean, Xavier McKinney's body's developed more now. We're talking about bodies now. Love to do this.
Love to talk about men's bodies.
But yeah, I think it's all lined up for Xavier McKinney to take on a box role that we're looking for.
I would be surprised, yeah, Jace, if we saw less than 50% of his snaps in the sweet spot.
Yeah.
And the price you're paying, Addy mentioned, that safety 10, that is reflected in these best balls as well. His range, DB6 to DB16. Mm-hmm. So somewhere around that 9 to 10 mark is probably where you're seeing this guy go off. And love, mm-hmm, Cam Curls, top five potential. Love. I view those guys very, very similar in terms of both have top five upside, and I would feel very, very comfortable taking them as my safety
and
one.
Xavier McKinney's one of those guys that, like, I don't even really care about the usage, right? Because I know he's actually good. I know he's like a playmaker. Same thing with like Antoine Winfield. Like, people keep telling you to fade Antoine Winfield because he plays nothing but deep, but that dude is a baller, and he's going to keep having top 10 finishes every year. I mean, sometimes, you know, the usage is great, but there are certain players that buck that stuff.
Yeah. So
yeah.
What do you think, Jace? Do you think
Minkah Fitzpatrick too? Look at it last year,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Javon Holland, another example as well. Yeah. Do you think he's going to be in line for a hefty kind of alignment in that sweet spot going into 2022? What's your take on that?
Yeah, possibly. You know, again, it's encouraging what we've seen so far in preseason. We're talking about a really small sample size, but he's played 39% of his snaps in the box so far, or on the defensive line, which is a huge uptick compared to last year. So I'm not getting too carried away with it, because again, it's the preseason. We sort of said this, and we'll keep saying it throughout the rest of the pod here, but it's encouraging. Things are heading in the right direction, which is what we want to see. Sometimes it's just about looking for positive trends, and so that's what we're doing here, right?
Yeah, and despite, you know, him playing, what, 28% in the sweet spot last year, he still put up, what, 93-94 tackles last year?
Yeah, 93 tackles.
I mean, maybe the efficiency was comes down or something, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like we're in range for some 100 tackle seasons now.
I love it. Yep. I love the Xavier McKinney outlook. Another player along the defensive line that we are very excited for there in New York is Azeez Ojulari. And we have him listed as a sleeper. He played 17 games, started 13 last season, 67% of snaps, 9.3 points per game. But if you look at, this was interesting, the top scoring rookie edge rusher in 2021, Addy, it is Jalen Phillips out of Miami, but only by 0.1 points. Azeez Ojulari was right on his heels. And we've had this realization, I think, right, of having more respect for the veterans. We were very rookie happy because we're a dynasty focused podcast for the most part. We've come to respect these vets more and more. Another realization I feel like we've had collectively as a show is that this defensive line position, whether it's interior, edge rusher, it takes a long time for these guys to reach their full potential. So even though this was a prolific draft class in terms of edge rusher, I think we need to be patient and expect years 3 and 4 to be when these guys are really turning into the best edge rushers in the league. That being said, year 2 for Azeez Ojulari along this Giants defensive line, I have a lot of excitement for what we could see from Ojulari. Double-digit point per game average, I think, is in range for what we saw based on his rookie season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah. That team's got a lot of juice right now, too, right? I mean, that's you got a new coach in there. Just drafted Kayvon, who hopefully he's okay.
Yeah, he's going to miss 3 to 4 weeks, it sounds like, with an MCL sprain.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you know, he's got some nice help around him, Ojulari does. He's actually good himself. And yeah, I mean, he was really productive for being a rookie, you know.
8 sacks, 8 tackles for loss, 49 total tackles.
Yeah, I mean, that's way above expectations, I would say, if you're the New York Giants. I like Ojulari a lot. I think he's – the problem with him is he is a little high as far as ADP, you know. People seem to usually draft him up there like he's, you know, like he's a top 20 option. Maybe I'm wrong there.
Yeah, it looks like I've got the ADP pulled up from the best balls, which, again, favors guys like these that have the chance to rack up multiple sacks. But DL32, DL38, DL36, DL32. So he's going
that's not bad.
In that 32 that's to, fine. Like, 38 range, yeah. It sounds like.
And it's just I like seeing young guys have big weeks early on, you know, just show that they have high ceilings. And Ojulari did that. He had a few really big weeks.
Yeah, very under the radar, it seems like, Jace. But what's your temperature on Ojulari going into this season?
Yeah, just to let you know, I'm seeing him around the same spot as well, 31, 32. That seems good value for him, I think, compared to some of the other guys that are going around the same spots. So Boye Mafe, Ebiketie, Alex Highsmith. Wow. It seems like sort of good company for Ojulari. I think that at that point in the draft, that's not bad value. But he's an interesting one for me. I'm still a little undecided on him. Eight sacks as a rookie is really impressive stuff, right? And then puts him in rare company. As you say, it's not an easy position to master. I guess none of them are, but edge rusher, we typically have to be quite patient, as you say, to wait for these guys to hit their feet. The reservation I have with him is he only managed 42 pressures. So we had a near sort of 20 and 25% finishing rate, and that's unsustainable. So he needs to bring more pressure in order to maintain his fantasy production going into year two. Can he do that? Of course he can. I wouldn't be surprised if he did. And I hope he does. It was his rookie season. So I'm trying not to judge too harshly for those guys that are just starting out. I was thinking about this earlier. While I used to love watching the Giants defenses of old, the OC, Umanyora, Strahan, and Justin Tuck as well. How fun would it be if Ojulari sort of develops the player that he's shown glimpses of, and if Thibodeau became the guy that's lived up to his billing? That wouldn't that be cool to watch? I think.
Yeah. It'd be a lot of fun. You got Leonard Williams there as well. Hopefully, yep. Kayvon comes back healthy with no real, lasting ramifications for this season.
Ojulari is also a type that kind of, he seems like he gets tackles too. He had 49 last year. That's not bad for an edge guy. He's a fine play, I think.
Yeah, compared to where you see some of the tackle totals for his contemporaries at edge rusher, that's not a bad tackle total. So even if maybe the sacks come down just a smidge because the finishing rate comes down, I do think he'll bring more pressures. I mean, only 67% of snaps on the year across 17 games played and 13 games started. I think he'll get more opportunity. But Jace is right. The question is, can he capitalize on that opportunity to then bring more pressures to the table? And so even if that finishing rate does fall, hopefully those two meet in the middle. And we still see somewhere between 8 and 12 sacks for Ojulari. But let's keep this rolling here, Jace, and wrap up with our final division here for our final team for the NFC West. We are going to the Pacific Northwest and the Seattle Seahawks. And this first player, I'm glad you're bringing him up because we've heard a lot of buzz on this guy this offseason. Who's your first player?
So, yeah, I'd go for a breakout here. Cody Barton. Everyone's talking about what can he do this year? He must feel like he's won the lottery, right? I mean, he's any fantasy managers who are patient enough to hold on to him through the last couple of years as well must be being pretty pleased with themselves right now. He's just in a great spot to produce. He's been very patient. Former third round pick, waiting behind Wagner and Brooks for a couple of years now. But with Wagner gone, Barton is going to be the next man up. We saw how productive these two off ball linebacker spots were for the Seahawks last year, and Brooks and Wagner, I think, both recorded career highs in terms of tackles, and both were top 10 fantasy options at the position, helped in some part by the fact the Seahawks defense couldn't get off the field. But can Barton do the same? It's a bit of a stretch, maybe, I think, sort of top 10, but it looks like he's going to be given every chance. So yeah. Fantasy managers are expecting big things. He's coming off the board as the linebacker 22 in some of the drafts I was looking at. Surprisingly, that's one spot. This one really surprised me, actually. One spot ahead of Nick Bolton. Given the fever around Nick Bolton, that surprised me slightly. I think Barton's label as a breakout candidate is justified. Looking forward to seeing what he can do. How about you guys? How are you feeling about Barton?
And we always say, and this is true in offensive fantasy football as well, but opportunity is king. Mm-hmm. And it seems like if there was ever a poster child for this mantra, it would be Cody Barton. Is he good? I don't know, but the opportunity and the role, I mean, inheriting that spot alongside Jordan Brooks in what has been probably at least top two or three most profitable linebacking groups for IDP. I mean, even if Cody Barton is not good, he's going to stumble backwards into probably a top 24 finish at worst, right?
Yeah, I would think so, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, he played so last year he played 100% of the snaps the last two games, racked up 18 total tackles in that stretch. So, I mean, that's what he's going to do. I mean, he's got a good shot at getting over 140 tackles. And, yeah, like Jace mentioned, like people probably think this guy like some undrafted, no name. He was a third round pick. I mean, that's decent draft capital, and he's just now getting his opportunity. You know, before Brooks, there was KJ Wright who was standing in his way. So it really has just now opened up for him. So Seattle is going to want to evaluate this guy too, with his contract getting ready to come to a close. So yeah, I mean, Cody Barton's going to have an opportunity this year. He's a solid tackler, and that's really all we're looking for in IDP.
Jace, you mentioned going off the board as LB22, I believe.
He can easily finish ahead of that.
So in the mocks or in the best balls that we've been doing, probably the widest range of any player that I've seen, at least that we've looked at so far, going between LB27 and LB56.
I say that 56 was very early on, right?
Yes.
So we've been doing these drafts since like what, May?
Probably May. Yeah.
Maybe no, before it was before the rookie draft. It is, and I think that Cody Barton speaks to really how advanced the IDP community has gotten.
I was going to say Cody Barton. I feel like we're really sort of leveling up as an IDP kind of, faction in how we are looking at profitable roles and players stepping into. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the Cody Barton drumbeat is as loud 5 to 6 years ago.
No, but I mean, it's just one of those deals. Like it's harder than ever to find sleepers just because there's so many good resources out there for us in IDP, right? Like, man, I remember Woolert was like banging the Barton drum like at the beginning of the summer, you know, and people take notice. But yeah, it's just a little side note there.
Yeah.
Good job, community.
Yeah. Good job, guys. We did it. We've elevated.
We got Cody up there.
Yeah, we got Cody to the appropriate level. Good job, guys.
Well, you guys play a part in this as well. You know, it's just sharing information in a way that, helps as many people as possible. So yeah, this sort of part as well is instrumental in doing things like that. So yeah, we've helped Bart. You've helped Bart with the things you do. So yeah, I mean, I don't think he's a very special player. I'm not entirely sure. He doesn't really have to be, like you say. He just has to be on the field, unless we're talking about all 22. The defense, as I said earlier on, struggled to get off the field. So, you know, he's in a great spot to surpass 1,000 snaps, possibly 100 tackles. He's just got to stay healthy. But the same is true for all of these players we talked about. They've all just got to stay healthy and get on the field. So,
yeah, and I mean, how many special players are there, right, in IDP? There's like maybe 40 to 50. Like, if you're really special, if you're a really special athlete, you're going to be playing offense for the most part.
That's right.
Yeah.
And think about this too. One of our most kind of our crown jewels for IDP, Roquan Smith. I mean, if you read the chatter from the insiders on Twitter, the other executives and GMs across the league looked at Roquan as a good player, but not someone they were going to give up significant draft capital to go acquire.
Exactly. And same thing like a Devin White type.
Exactly.
I mean, there's just not a lot of good candidates that are special out there. I mean, I think the edge guys.
Yes. That's the reason you're seeing the Chandler Jones and the Von Millers, even at their advanced age.
Those are your special athletes on defense.
Get these massive deals. But that's why all 22 is such an interesting concept, is because
there's no good linebackers.
That's right. You look at it and you're like, this is such a profitable position for IDP, but it is a barren wasteland for formats like all 22, where you have to look at how good are these players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's, like you say, a real dearth of decent off-ball linebackers that can do a little bit of everything. I was thinking about this the other day. Linebackers that are, you know, I hate the word complete, but guys that can do a little bit of everything. It's probably, with confidence, only two. I'm going to digress a little bit here, but only two players, I think, that can do everything really well. Think about it, it's not in a fantasy sense, in real football terms, but Leonard and Warner, I think, are probably two of the linebackers that can do everything well. Wagner, probably still there as well. But yeah, it's painful. It's painful.
Yeah, and maybe Micah Parsons. I mean, yes. Right? That's really the list.
But
Micah Parsons is used as, you know, on the edge, and he's his own little thing.
Yeah, they're not like trying to like drop him in coverage for a bunch of snaps. You know, they want to get him off the edge and let him pin his ears back.
But there's not. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is, so it's a good job by us of. Just kind of not holding your nose, because I don't think he's necessarily like an Alex Anzalone where this guy is just absolute trash as an NFL player, but he's in a role that maybe could produce for IDP. No, we're not saying that. But a Cody Barton type is not going to be a name up in lights for
his
fantasy.
His name's Cody Barton.
Exactly, right? Like, he sounds like an off-brand Marvel character, not someone that you're going to be excited to draft in IDP. That's another thing I think we brought to the table, Jace. We've helped elevate the importance of swaggy names and dreads and visors and tattoos. You got to bring drip to the equation, right?
For sure.
So let's get to your last player here, and we're going to wrap up with a new addition to the Seattle Seahawks. Who's your next guy?
Yeah, so I've named one guy, but really I could have chosen any of the players at his position for this team. So I've gone with Uchenna Nwosu as a bust. But as I said, could really extend to Boye Mafe, Dalal Taylor, and any one of the others that they've got there. So Seahawks rotate edge rushers like no other team, except maybe the Bills. Six or seven guys played between 205-50 snaps for the Seahawks last year. And these were snaps where these guys earned these largely in the same games as each other, as opposed to just injury replacements. It's just a horrible spot for edge rushers in fantasy. So one or two of their stable of sort of edge rushers will have a big performance in any given week. We saw Darrell Taylor be that guy for Stars last year and done that too. But can you predict who's going to show up one week and who's going to show up the next? Good luck playing that guessing game. I do love Seahawks edge rushers in best ball, and or if we have big rosters and can afford to carry them. But in any other formats, I tend to avoid them. That's, again, not to say that I dislike these guys as individual players. Nwosu wasn't anything special for the Chargers. I had hopes he could replace Ingram, but he's not really capable of consistently performing at that level. And in my opinion, $20 million over 2 years is a bit of an overpay. But as always, I hope he proves me wrong. Taylor, he had a good run last year, but again, sort of 20% finishing rate, not really holding out a huge amount of hope that he's going to be able to match that again. He'll either have to play more snaps or bring more pressure to maintain the value some afford him at the moment. And Mafe, he looked great in that. Did you see him in that first preseason game with a couple of sacks and the forced fumble? That performance will only add to the hype. But I'm in no hurry to pick him up at what his cost currently is or what will now be. In some ways, it's just a frustrating landing spot for him from a fantasy perspective, but things change. Schemes don't stay static for huge amounts of time. So hopefully in the future he gets more of an opportunity than some of his contemporaries at that point. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. But yeah, for me, Nwosu, Mafe, Taylor, and any one of the other sort of three or four edge rushers they've got there, not really great value.
Yeah, I know, Addy, when we had Greg Rosenthal on and we were previewing the top IDP free agents, he specifically wanted to bring up Uchenna Nwosu. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I'd love to get this guy on the Colts. This was before we brought in Ngakoue. And he just landed, like Jay said, in a not ideal situation.
Yeah. I mean, the rotation stuff is definitely very true. But Seattle plays a ton of snaps. And I think they're going to continue to play a ton of snaps. So, I mean, yeah, the we don't like them rotating, but I do think Uchenna is the best piece on that line now. I'm a big fan. I just like his game, man. But you're right. They all those guys are kind of similar. Like, Boye Mafe is kind of similar to Uchenna. And then Daryl Taylor, I mean, they're all, you know, they don't seem that much different from each other. But I'm just betting on the talent of Uchenna. I think that we saw a few times last year he went over 30 points. I don't know. I'm okay with where he's going in draft. I mean, if I'm looking at the best balls here, he was DL51, DL59, DL65, DL60, DL51. I mean, I'll take that all day
long.
That's
beautiful. Yeah, especially in best ball, like Jay said, love Uchenna Nwosu there.
I mean, you know, if we're talking MFL, any of these sites is going to have him listed as a linebacker, RSO, I'm going to be out on Uchenna. But in sleeper, he's definitely very appealing to me.
Absolutely. And if you're wondering what the rotation is, another nugget from John's preseason week two takeaways article, it is Daryl Taylor, Uchenna Nwosu played the bulk of snaps together as starters and only came off for short stints, while Alton Robinson and Boye Mafe entered the game when they came off the field. This group is expected to rotate fairly heavily, so Taylor and Nwosu are the only ones worth rostering in 2022, barring injury. I think that's spot on.
Yeah.
Heavy rotation, but I'm with Addy. I think that Uchenna is the best of a so-so group.
Yeah, it's
going to
be a
rushers.
Rotation, but again, I do think he is. I mean, the Alton Robinson and Boye Mafe, I mean, those guys are fine, but they're young, and it's just going to be, I think, Uchenna leading that pack.
I agree.
So if someone comes off, it's going to be Daryl Taylor, I think, for Boye Mafe.
Yeah. Jace, I think if you're getting Uchenna at the prices that Adam mentioned, will you take a stab, especially in a best ball type of format?
Yeah, I don't think he's a horrible player by any stretch. And in best ball, I'd be loading up on these guys. I don't know for sure that it seems from a cursory glance, these guys that I don't play every snap. I'm gonna check in on this actually, make sure what I'm saying is true. But it seems to me that guys that don't play every snap and that do enter the game a little fresher than the other guys that are out there all the time and seem to have a higher finishing rate than others. But I'll don't hold me to that. I'm gonna look into that and see if there is any merit or any truth behind that. But yeah, I'd still be happy taking Nwosu in best ball, certainly, and any of those Seahawks edge rushers, because you know at least one or two of them any week will have a big week. It's just trying to choose which one. But yeah, best ball takes away that problem, right?
So just here's some names that are going around him. Trayvon Walker, George Karloftis, Quinnen Williams, Arnold Ebiketie, Preston Smith. Would you prefer Uchenna over any of those guys, or what do you think?
Karloftis stands out to me. I'm a bit of a fan. I'm quite hopeful about what he can do. Preston Smith, you know, he's a weird one. He sort of fell off the edge of the, I don't know, his value took a massive hit. He just didn't do anything for about a year and a half. And then after I'll have to look this up, but after week 11, no player, apart from Max Crosby, no player in the league had more pressures than Preston Smith. And he just, again, because he did nothing for the year and a half prior to that, he's just completely forgotten about. Obviously, Za'Darius Smith is now gone. So yeah, someone like Preston Smith does intrigue me, especially in best ball. Yep. If he can carry over that form into this season, he's gonna make some people very happy.
Yeah, I was gonna say that group sounds about right. That is that those are some contemporaries,
and and that's exactly how I am too. Like I think I might take Preston Brown or Preston Smith over him.
Preston Brown, we went to high school with that guy. Don't take him.
He's
bad
a
news.
Bad guy.
Bad heart for
bad
sure.
Bad guy. Sold me some bad stuff.
Bet he did. I think that is he's being valued appropriately. Sometimes we look, and Jace, you've mentioned a couple of these guys, and the names going around, I'm like, wow, like I want the player we're talking about head and shoulders above some of these other guys. Yeah, I think Uchenna is being valued appropriately.
I think the point, though, is like Preston Smith shouldn't be in the DL50 range. Like both, like I think Uchenna and Preston probably should be in that DL35 to 40-ish range, right? Both those guys are valued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, again, I think what you're saying, Jace, is for expectations. If you have high expectations for Uchenna Nwosu for 2022, if you're penciling him in as your DL2, for example, you're probably going to be disappointed, and he's going to bust if that's where you're viewing him.
Yeah. Again, you know, I don't dislike him as a player. I'd had years of watching him very closely as a, you know, a former Charger, etc. And you know, he has come on a little bit in his time in the league. So I'm sure, you know, he'll do pretty well for the Seahawks when he gets on the field. I'm just, my only question is, you know, how often will that be compared to other guys that are going around him? But you know, like you say, best ball and the range he's going in, there's much worse decisions to be made.
Absolutely. Well, there you go, folks. 16 players, 2 from the 8 teams in the NFC West and the NFC East. Addy, you would think we would learn our lesson. I told Jay, says, I'm going to try to keep it to like 90 minutes. And here we are cresting the hour and 50 minute mark. Yeah. So
hopefully work's not too mad at me.
I was going to say, yeah, you're probably due back about an hour ago. So I know we said this is going to be a two-parter, but at the risk of putting out a 3.5 hour episode, we're going to go ahead and release this thing. And then we'll put out part 2 with Bobby and Tripp a little bit later this week. So y'all look forward to that. We'll be hitting on the AFC East and the AFC West. Jace, thank you for coming on and coming with the hot takes, the research, some of the nuggets you were dropping, man. If folks aren't following you yet on Twitter and following your work, give them the details on where they can get the goodness this season.
Okay, yes, I'm too kind, by the way. Thanks for the kind words. People are going to be so disappointed when they actually follow me and see that I'm nowhere near as good as you just made me out to be. But I'm writing for IDP Guys and for DLF this year. I'll be doing the start sit for IDP Guys again, where I go into a silly level of detail on every defensive player that's fantasy relevant. I'm joined by one other guy over at IDP Guys, Aaron Mabry, helped me out this year. And then over at PFF, I'll be doing the Waiver Wire article, the weekly Waiver Wire article this year as well. So it's not PFF, DLF, sorry.
I was like, you got promoted while you were doing the pod with us.
No.
You unfollowed John and suddenly got his job. I love this. I love what's happening here.
PFF on the brain. But yeah, I'll be doing the Waiver Wire article for DLF this year. So got some rankings over there as well. So yeah, you'll find me in various places doing various things. Come along for the ride.
Well, thank you for coming along for the ride with us this afternoon, Jace. We really appreciate the time. Hope you all have enjoyed this episode. Like we said, we're going to go ahead and get this one out right now, so look for that. Hope you all enjoyed it, and look for part 2 coming a little bit later this week with Dynasty Trip breaking down the AFC East and the AFC West. Next week, we have Gary Davenport, the godfather of IDP, on with John Macri talking my guys for the 2022 season. And then the week after that, that week leading up to the kickoff game with the Rams and Bills, I believe it is, we are going to be doing our flag plant. So look forward to seeing how poorly we do with those picks. But until next time, we will see y'all soon. Take care. She ain't never left her hometown. We gon' take a trip today. Let me take you away.